This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're in our 8 o'clock hour here on The Morning Shift. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. It is time for the wake-up call, 404-726-0929. The NFL franchise tag deadline is today at 4 o'clock. If you want to call in and tell us what you would like to see the Falcons do going after free agents, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, you can give us a shout. It is the wake-up call, 404-726-0929. I have something a little bit off topic. I gave up the Peloton.
Oh, no.
I did the trial, and basically it was just sitting there collecting dust because it doesn't pair well with what I do already working out-wise. So I think maybe once I get to where I want to be, maybe I'll actually buy one. But I do like that they let you try it out.
Yeah,
my sister owns one. A lot of people I know own one. And they're like, just give the trial a shot.
Yeah.
And it's getting picked up next Tuesday. So see you later. Have a little bit more space in my apartment. And yeah.
I have a follow-up for you real quick, Tiff. Can you detail or maybe elaborate on why it doesn't work well with what you're doing working out right now?
All right. So, like, if Monday, I did heavy legs yesterday.
Hey, me too.
So, today, I like to do more upper body focus and walk.
Maybe
I'll walk at an incline, whatever.
Right.
And I walk every day anyway.
Yeah.
So, but my legs don't really get a chance to recover cycling. It's like a pretty good beating on your quads, hamstrings, all that stuff.
Makes sense.
So, it wasn't falling into my workout splits.
Yeah. If you didn't have the walk, then maybe, like, after upper body, you could, keep the legs somewhat loose by cycling, but if you're already walking, like you said, it's too much.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
This, sorry, pulling out for the Peloton.
This seems like another Peloton story I've heard, and not like criticize. I'm just saying, like, I feel like a lot of people do exactly what you did. They get it when they get the Peloton, and then they end up just because Amy did that too. I think it was like maybe 2 years ago, she grabbed the Peloton and the rental one, and
same thing I did.
She had it for like 3 or 4 months, and she's like, it's not conducive for what I'm doing. And so she got rid of it too.
I got to tell you, my wife's been complete opposite. She bought hers almost 5 years ago, like right after the start of the pandemic, and she does it all the time. And I don't do it. I tried to like pick it up for a little bit. The seat is just not
built. You didn't buy the cushion? Thing.
No.
I bought a cushion.
Oh God, it's like a toothpick, man. Like I can't. But here's the thing: it's her Peloton, and she's got her like shoes locked into it, and it's all set up for like her. So like I always am like,
it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to hop on that thing and do the whole thing. So,
but is that like her main workout thing?
Yep,
like
she's
not lifting or doing.
I will do no, God no. She, it's all she can do to find 20 minutes to get in there and knock out a Peloton, which that's the best part of the Peloton is that she doesn't have time to go to the gym. We get the kids home, getting the kids fed and everything else. And I'll try to buy her 30 minutes to where she can go in and knock out a workout if she wants to. And that's why it works for her. Or after we get the kids down at night, kids are in bed 8:30, go in there and knock out, a 30 minute ride and do whatever else you need. I actually enjoy the Peloton. Like I wish that I fit better on it. Because I like the scenic rides that you can do where you look like you're riding through like the Swiss Alps or whatever. I think that's cool. But I got to tell you, it's been 5 years. She bought it. She paid it off 2 years ago and still uses it pretty pretty religiously.
Yeah,
and it's not a knock on it. It's just not. Tons of people love it. Yeah.
I think my point to Bo's comment is: isn't that any piece of exercise equipment?
I think so. Yeah,
like it's like if you have like a gym membership, exercise equipment, whatever it is, it's just hard to stay, you know, religious and routine with it. Because life comes at life happens.
But
you know
I
what
feel
mean?
Like I. But you're training for life. Like it's not just like the fun aesthetic stuff comes with it, right? You can fit better into some clothes, buy some smaller things. Maybe you know look good naked is what everybody likes to say. But then more so would be like, all right, maybe you've got to carry around a toddler. That toddler weighs like 35 pounds or something like that. If you're lifting, if you're doing core stuff, a lot of what you do already translates to everyday life stuff for longevity.
Yeah,
so, you know.
I think it's a solid point with any workout equipment, home workout equipment. That's why I have a gym membership. Would I love to fill my garage up with workout gear? Yeah. Hell yeah!
Because you can do it in my apartment.
Turn that garage into a CrossFit.
Looks like a gym.
But that said, you think I'm going to go out there when it's 25 degrees outside and put in a good workout? No, but you know what I will do?
Go to the gym.
Put on shorts and a hoodie. Run to the truck. Crank it up. Turn the heat on. Blast it. Go to the gym. That's 70 degrees inside and get a full workout.
My favorite part of the gym is the sauna. My favorite part of the gym is the sauna. I'm like, man, I'm going to get through this pump just to get in the sauna.
Dude, you didn't realize you were doing it, but you just turned me and reminded me what my life of squid is.
Okay.
I've got a question about sauna etiquette.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know. It's not a dirty way. Not in a bad way.
Is that a gym or is that...
Gym.
Is it, okay.
Not like... Not like that.
Naked in a sauna?
I was going to say, we're not going like Turkish style, right?
No. It's not like that. It's just, you know, how much interaction is too much in the sauna?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Talking. is that what you're saying? Like, you don't want anybody talking.
It's called a tease for a reason, Michael.
I'll wait.
Again, this is the wake-up call, 447-260-0929. We did talk about a list of free agents that The Athletic had put together. From defensive tackles, and they were discussing if the Falcons could land any of these guys. Milton Williams from the Eagles, Javon Hargrave from the 49ers, Puna Ford from the Chargers, just to name a few of the guys on this list. Calais Campbell even on the list. Is there anyone out there that maybe you would like to see come to the Falcons?
I think Milton Williams is the best defensive tackle in this group. I thought he was phenomenal last year. And now, the problem for Milton Williams with me is it's easy to be really freaking good when you play or with Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter and et cetera, right? Because you're in a rotation with some really good players. Fletcher Cox is a guy that he's been in a rotation in before in his past. The problem for me, you know, so that's the thing for me is he the same player when he gets here? And that's the thing about signing guys who are productive on defensive lines. And then, you know, in the NFL, because sometimes it's about the system and what they've been next to as much as what they are.
Yeah. And one of the questions, too, that I have moving forward, one of the names we have not talked about in terms of free agency is Eddie Goldman. Like, what does the future look like with it? I thought Eddie Goldman at times last year was our best defensive lineman. As a matter of fact, you could make the argument probably that our top, if you want to put Onyemata in this list, our top three defensive linemen last year are all over the age of 31 because Onyemata and Grady, and then you add Eddie Goldman into that, which I know he kind of faults retired a few times. I'll be curious to see what the future is for him and you know, kind of where the Falcons want to go because he's a guy you'd like to have around, but do you know where his mindset's going to be and what kind of money does that cost moving forward? Because I valued him as a player last year. As much as you struggled stopping the run at times, he was definitely a bright spot in that lineup.
Well, put it this way, when you did have success against the run, normally he was on the field.
Yeah.
So, I agree with you there. It's why if you could get Eddie Goldman back on a two-year deal. Now, look, does Eddie Goldman want to play another year? He went through a full year, his first full year, and like I know 2 years, but maybe...
Might have been longer than that, yeah.
Well, he missed 2020. I think he played in 21, and then they signed him, and he missed... Then he kind of retired in 22 and then came out and then retired again in 23, and then he played 24. Yeah. I might be mixing up the years, but the reality is his first year in a while, a couple years, played well. Could you get another? Could you get him again back next year? And does that make Onyemata okay? Well, we don't replace because you know Onyemata was brought in here to do multiples, but you replace that money
it's
with that.
To be one of your bigger bodies.
Yeah. So, and then you can go draft. Maybe Walter Nolan is the guy you go get there.
Oh,
I know,
man,
that's
don't
your
even
guy.
Tempt me.
Maybe you go get a Puna Ford instead.
Yeah. Well, and too, I want to raise this question too, because I think this is what a lot of the thought process of the Atlanta Falcons in terms of free agents or in terms of defensive line. It's like, okay, well, you drafted a few guys last year, so you know it's like a zero sum game. Like, we're also talking about Kentavious Street's a free agent. Like, you're talking about the possibility of a completely revamping what the defensive line room is if you add in Eddie Goldman, right, Kentavious Street, and then, you know, Grady Jarrett, David Onyemata, what are their futures?
Kentavious Street was a lot better in Ryan Nielsen's system than he was in last year.
Yeah.
A lot better. He played a lot better with Ryan Nielsen. Now, I don't know why. Maybe that.
Right.
Now, Ryan Nielsen was a guy that coached him in college.
Yeah, at NC State.
And so kind of knew what he was and what used him as. Because remember where Kentavious Street came from? Philly's D-line.
Could we make the argument, though, and just for argument's sake, can we make the argument that all of our defensive line were better in Ryan Nielsen's scheme?
Yeah, I think you could make that argument. I think you had more sacks under Ryan Nielsen's scheme. I think
Your run defense was putrid at times last year. And one of the reasons you didn't have more sacks is because you didn't find yourself in third and long enough.
Well, it was also putrid at times late in the season under Ryan Nielsen, too. Let's not forget that when Kentavious Street went out against Tampa 2 years ago at home,
yes,
they ran the ball down your throat with Rashad White. And that hurts.
That was the worst.
You.
Then they were the worst rushing team in the league at that.
Yeah. Point. So I don't know. Just I'll take Milton Williams if we can afford him.
You're like, I'll take whoever.
I love Milton Williams.
I love Milton Williams, but I don't know if we can afford him. And I will tell you straight up, if you go sign in, and I know we'll talk about edge rushers, I think tomorrow. The list is put out with every position. If you go sign an edge rusher, then I would draft an interior guy, the best interior guy,
yeah,
or the best cornerback, whichever one I had rated higher on my board
is what you would go.
I would go get. That said,
sign me up for Walter Nolan, man.
I'll take. I think
I'm ready.
I'm starting to grow into the Shamar Stewart.
Ooh.
All right. Well, I like how you sound. I like the optimism. Let's hope you can keep it when it comes to the Braves season, because it's not starting out the way you may have wanted. We'll tell you which superstar is out with some fractured ribs next year when we return on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 99 of the Game. Rolling along here on the Morning Shift, we have a Life of Squid that we'll get to. But first, bad news for the Braves and catcher Sean Murphy. So the team announced that he will miss the start of the season with a rib injury. The one-time All-Star and Gold Glove winner is expected to be sidelined for 4 to 6 weeks. He has a cracked rib on his left side.
Dude, just absolutely brutal. When all the conversations we've had all offseason, when Alex Anthopoulos comes on to the Steakhouse, when you hear from anybody about free agency and the signings and Max Fried walking, which I just saw him on the screen talking to Roger Clemens in the Yankees dugout. That makes me sick.
Yeah, that broke in my mouth. Thank
but
you.
Every conversation we've had around the Braves has been, you know what, man, don't need to do anything too crazy. Just got to stay healthy, and hopefully these guys come back around to all-star form. Had 12 different all-stars the last 2 years, Sean Murphy being one of them. And now you have to have that conversation about what his future will be like this year. Obviously, who replaces him, you know, seems like Chadwick Trump, and then Drake Baldwin, what the immediate future is for him. So it's just we got kicked in the teeth so many times last year. I mean, it was one after another. I don't think we went a month through the Braves season without like a season ending or a long-term injury being announced. You had the toe for Ozzie Albies, and you know, everything happened with A.J. Minter, and obviously Ronald Acuna, and like the list just kept, the Spencer Strider news, everything just kept happening. We didn't even get past March 2nd without Sean Murphy getting hit in the ribs and being done for 4 to 6 weeks minimum. It just feels like another kick in the teeth, and I hope this is not the start of a trend.
Well, let's look at the positives.
Oh, wow.
The good thing is it's March 2nd. You don't play a game.
This is what we do with the Braves. I'm definitely the downtrodden one, and
that's accurate.
It's like the flip from the Hawks.
That's accurate. It's been a season, you know, like it's been a while. Now we're talking about baseball again. I forgot how it goes here.
You've got in March 27th, the opening day, you've got now a whole spring training to work in Drake Baldwin. Drake, I do believe that Drake Baldwin could be the future at this position. I do believe that they wanted, in the perfect world, Sean Murphy stays healthy. You go to less of a platoon than you've had the last few years with Contreras and Darnold and Darnold and Murphy, and this and you have Trump as kind of just a to spell him on like day nights, right? Like they don't like it, the Braves are an organization, and a lot of organizations this way. If a guy catches at night and the next game is a day game, he's got that day off, and vice versa. So that is something they've done, but I think that was going to be the way it was. That said, maybe Drake Baldwin just is the guy that had almost 372 games, had almost as many walks as strikeouts in 72 games, and had over a 400 on base percentage down there in Gwinnett in his 72 games there. But, you know, this could be a sign of the future where, hey, he goes in there and makes it where you can't send him down. I don't know. The reality is Sean Murphy's a hell of a defensive catcher.
Yeah.
The one thing that always keeps getting brought up when it comes to Braves catchers and how everyone says AA missed on this trade. After 2 years, you've had a really good season from Sean Murphy and a bad season from Sean Murphy. An injury plagued, wasn't very good at the plate season. His behind the plate game has always been good here. And I think the Braves pitchers in his time catching games is like a one run lower, like a full run lower.
Yeah.
ERA when he's behind the plate. So he calls a good game. But the Contreras stuff always comes up. I have heard from multiple people that, you know, and read things from multiple people that William Contreras, while we loved him, was on the World Series team, the reason he got traded is because of who he was in the locker room.
Yeah.
And he wasn't liked. He wasn't likable. And it was kind of spelled out that he was kind of a jerk to other teammates. And that's why they got rid of him. It had nothing to do with performance. Do I wish his skill set was still here? Right now, hell yeah. But I think Drake Baldwin could be as good, if not better, hopefully. And he's a 27th ranked prospect out of Keith Law's top 100. I know you don't want to hear all that, but that's why they did it.
Well, and I think, you know, more recently, we got to talk about the fact that Travis Darnold literally hit a tater yesterday in spring training, right? It's almost like he can hear the echoes coming from Braves camp, and he's like, oh, yeah, check this out. 15 of these dingers last year, and this is what I'm actually able to do. Shouldn't have let me walk. So, you know, we talked about it last year numerous times. You thought you had two starting caliber catchers, and it feels like right now that you don't have any. And that's what really the gut punch comes down to for me, is that you look at it and go, you had Travis Darnold last year that felt like such a nice safety blanket when Sean Murphy went down with the oblique strain, and he kind of held you up, and Chadwick Trump filled in whenever necessary. And now it's like Chadwick Trump is not anything offensively, and now we were looking at a rookie in Drake Baldwin being part of that. And look, I have all the faith in the world in Drake Baldwin. I think it's great, but he's going to have to be your actual starter and, you know, catch three out of every four games in order to make it worth bringing him up to the big league.
Because you're concerned about his development.
Yeah, and I don't, like, keep him out of AAA games if you're just going to let him sit away on the bench here and only play, you know, twice every 10 days?
Well, and that's what everybody reported has said, like, the plan will be to start him. But that's why that's why I'm optimistic about the fact that you have 23 days, right? The opening day is March 27th, if I'm not mistaken. You have 23 days to get him comfortable, get the staff comfortable with him. There still might be one of those veterans that be like, hey, I'd rather Trump catch me. But that's how it is. I mean, I want to remember, like, Greg Maddux, I think Eddie Pereira's caught Greg Maddux for a ton of his career when he was here, when they were here together.
For sure, yeah.
And you can go back and listen to some of those stories of Maddux.
Is Eddie Pereira still involved in the organization? Who was the bullpen
catcher?
He's
a bullpen.
He's out there in the bullpen. Coach.
So, yeah, he's still involved. Baseball's a different sport.
How do I put this? I almost said, how do I frame this? Which is exactly what I want to ask. Framing pitches seems to be less of a thing than it was when Eddie Perez was catching Greg Maddux, right? They could extend the zone. Does that kind of soften the blow of a Sean Murphy getting hurt and a Drake Baldwin moving in that role? It's like, I don't necessarily need him to come in and keep extending the plate and working things because it's kind of been taken over. Obviously, we talked about the ABS system, but it's kind of been taken over in a lot of ways.
I think there's still a lot of framing going on. I do. I think framing is still a thing. I just think it is less of a thing than it used to be. But also remember, those were guys when Eddie Perez is framing pitches. Those are guys that literally lived on the corners. Like location was everything for Greg Maddux and Tom Glavine. Tom Glavine made a living on the black part of the plate, like a living on it. So I think that's where you're going to. That's where you're.
He played you off like the Oscars.
Yeah, he did.
A little
started
bit.
The violin.
You start my music.
Started the violin. Said, man, you're being long winded. It's got to go.
Speaking of long winded, the Fireshire's number one fan from Baron Burton's, Rob Tribble's in the house. Just saw him walk in there.
Robbie T.
He looked somewhat homeless today when he walked in, but it's all right. So
the homeless professor, Rob Tribble.
Rob Tribble always likes to pick on me when I'm either doing my show in the mornings when he's filling on the morning shift or just now.
Well, it's kind of a common theme around here.
That's true.
I go to the gym yesterday, get done with legs, and I go, man, I haven't been in the sauna. I did drink a bottle of wine Saturday and had a couple other drinks. So I'm going to sweat it out.
That's not how it works.
I go, that's how it works in my world, Tiff. And I go sit in the sauna after a good leg workout. And I got my headphones in. I was actually listening to Dukes and Bell on the Odyssey app. And I was reading this story on The Athletic. I sent somebody an Athletic story.
You're relaxing.
And it's squid time. And I hear
the third person.
And and then I kind of pay attention a little. I just had my phone in my hand, just kind of turned the volume down a little bit. You have a good workout? What? I was a dude sitting next to me. He's like, did you have a good workout? And I was like, oh yeah, man, it's all right. He's like, oh, but I didn't know you had your headphones in. I go, yeah. I mean, I don't really talk in the sauna.
You said that?
No, I didn't say that.
Oh, my gosh. I was like, whoa.
I said, nah, man, it's all cool. I was like, what about you? And so he starts talking, and he's like, yeah, I always have good conversations in the sauna. And I go, oh.
You asked.
Well, I don't.
And at that point, he removed his towel.
I was like.
Oh, God.
No, not that kind of sauna. And I was like, oh, yeah, man. I was like, so yeah, I don't get in here a lot. It's normally too busy in the sauna for me because if I got to stand, I'm good. That means there's too many people in there.
Yeah.
Then another dude comes in.
Stretch in though.
And then he starts talking to that other dude, the guy that talked to me. And then now all three of us are wrapped in a conversation.
It's a gathering spot, man.
And I don't mind, but am I kind of out of touch because I'm not a conversationalist in a sauna?
Absolutely not.
No. Well, and let's just take the sauna out of it. How many times in general would you say you get, like what percentage of the time in general would you say you get into conversations with people you don't know in public? I mean, I would say it's
airplanes,
5%.
I avoid conversation at all costs just because, I don't know. I mean, I will talk when necessary.
Yeah.
Appropriate.
Yeah.
I try to avoid it, and most times I've been successful. I find the key is to already have my headphones in before I even get on the plane. As I'm boarding, I'm putting them in, and I sit down and just try to chill. I'll nod in, you know, what is it? Like, you know, and I can't find the word. I'll nod if someone sits next to me. A recognition, right. Whatever the word is. Just like, hey, all right,
acknowledgement,
cool.
I think. Yeah.
But then someone will start talking, and then I'll have to pull the headphone out.
You know what's funny? We started watching the show last night. Watched the first episode of White Lotus. Have any of y'all ever seen
it? I watched the first episode. Okay. I watched the first two.
Simone just asked me about
it last night.
Are you talking about the new season?
No, just the whole first episode. The first episode of White Lotus. No.
Of the very first
very
season.
First
very
season.
First season.
Yeah, I've watched both of those.
So if y'all remember back in the very first episode, the guy, I don't know anything about the show, so don't give it away, but the guy's sitting in the terminal. And I guess he's flying back, and they go, this couple is trying to make conversation with him, and he's talking about there's a body on the plane. And he goes, with all due respect, please leave me the F alone. And I was like, dude, we've all been, I have no idea what he's going through, but we've all been that guy.
Yes, you'll find out.
Yeah.
But
Tiff's right. You'll definitely find out.
But yes.
And look, I want to say this because I don't know who this guy was. Maybe he listens. Super nice guy. And I appreciate the fact that he was a really nice dude. I'm just kind of quiet in those kind of times. That's like I said, it's squid time. And, you know, I just kind of, I can be quiet.
That's when you get down to the hotel hot tub and somebody's like, hey, man, where are you from? You're like,
Nah, bro. If somebody gets in the hotel hot tub, I'm getting out of it.
Well, you try to find that, like, after the plane conversation, there's that awkward lull, and that's when I go for, let me reinsert these headphones into my ear because the conversation's over. Okay. All right. When we come back here on the morning shift, we've got NFL writer for NFL Media and NFL.com, Eric Edholm, joining us ahead of this free agency franchise tag deadline today. Stay with us here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game. We are back here on the morning shift and going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find NFL writer for NFL Media and NFL.com, Eric Edholm, joining us once again on the morning shift. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. Good to have you back with us. How'd things go for you in Indy?
Yeah, I think pretty well. I mean, a lack of sleep aside, right? I didn't have my special pillow and all that. But, no, it was a busy week as always. And, you know, we stayed till the bitter end at NFL Media. I was there through the offensive line workouts on Sunday. So just got back yesterday, kind of processing some things, making some calls, and trying to figure out how this draft is going to go.
Well, you're kind of starstruck, huh? Meeting the guy in the hotel that threw it right to Jimmy Chitwood.
I think what happens is you ask for your car to be brought around, and they take an extra 5 minutes so this guy can tell his story of glory for you. No, I'm kidding. He's a really nice guy. He's the dude who turns the ball over late in the game. I guess that's better than not being in the movie or something.
Yeah. Look. You know, there's so much about these defensive line group, and Shamar Stewart is a guy that really just kind of just jumped off the out of the workouts in Indy over the weekend. And when you watch him on film, he's good, but he doesn't really just stand out as a complete edge rusher. What's everyone saying about him up there after that workout and what they project him as in the NFL?
Yeah, I don't think anyone was stunned to see him work out the way he did, only because I think, you know, the reputation in the scouting community was that pound for pound, Shamar Stewart might be one of the best athletes in this draft, if not, you know, top two or three anyway. I think he's right up there. And when you see those kind of workouts and those measurements put together, it just screams top 10. It really does. Historically, very few players with those kinds of dimensions and that kind of athleticism make it much farther than the 12th pick, at the most 15th, something like that. So, you know, that's the reality. The tape, obviously, like you said, is a little bit inconsistent. You do see a pressure source, but not a consistent sack source. And, you know, I was talking to some personnel guys just about that in general, kind of the workout versus the tape, and somebody brought up Rashawn Gary, who I think had three and a half sacks his final year. Danielle Hunter had a three-sack season before entering the NFL, and, of course, both those guys have become quality pass rushers, injuries aside and whatnot. But so I think it still goes back to the combination of the tape being good. Not, I wouldn't say it's exceptional, especially on that defensive line as good as it was at A&M. But the traits are undeniable, and that I think is going to bode very well for him. So, you know, as a team like Atlanta in play, if he's there at 15, I think they would scoop him up. If I just had to guess today, you know, early March, who knows what happens 6-8 weeks from now. But still, I think more than likely, I would say there's at least a 50-50 chance he's gone by that point. But I think he's very much in play for a team like Atlanta.
Eric, on your Twitter account, and I think you're such a great follow during the combine, man. Always keep us do such a good job keeping us up to date. You mentioned a couple, you know, conversations. You were jacked up about Tyler Booker and some of the things he was saying. Trey Henderson was another guy that you thought was very polished. A lot of the conversation, though, in the last 24 hours has been about Shedeur Sanders and how he came off the media or how he came off to multiple teams. Josiane Anderson, Todd McShay. What did you make of Shedeur Sanders at the podium and you know, kind of the energy that he was emitting?
Yeah, I was actually at a different podium at that time, so I didn't see. But, you know, some people I talked to who were listening to his media session thought it was great. So, you know, who knows, right? Again, is that exactly the person he's portraying in the private meetings? It's hard to know. I, unless I talk to kind of multiple people in the same meeting and get kind of the the same type of takeaway, it's very difficult for me to say, like, oh, he had poor meetings and stuff. I've had teams tell me about guys who struggled in an interview or projected themselves a certain way that was off-putting, whatever it is. And, you know, and then later talked to a different team who said, you know what, he was actually pretty good when we had him in there. So some of these meetings happen late at night, right, too. You never know how these guys are coming off at different times of the day. They might have been stuck in medical. I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying, you know, an 18-minute interview probably can only tell you so much. But for some people, it's a first impression, right? They certainly have heard the name Shedeur Sanders, and this is, of course, when the coaches get involved in the scouting process. You know, like Dan Campbell said, my biggest thing are these meetings, because even though our scouts have known these guys for over a year, I'm just getting to know them now. And so when you hear that, it obviously does put some weight on that evaluation. For Sanders specifically, you know, he was touting his sort of rebuilding two different programs, Jackson State, which was, you know, let's face it, like many HBCU programs, they were flying well below the radar. And he and Dion and Travis Hunter and the rest of them showed a huge spotlight on it. The landscape there is different. Colorado was a dead, dormant program. Yeah, no buzz whatsoever. Completely changed with their arrival. It's a package deal, obviously, so, you know, the whole operation deserves some credit for that. But, you know, I think what I heard most from scouts about Shedeur was the physical traits are not that thrilling. You know, for the son of Deion Sanders, yes, he has Hall of Fame DNA coursing through his body, but this is not somebody with a rocket arm. This is not somebody who's an elite scrambler. This is a smaller than normal quarterback. His body is a little bit on the lean side. He's taken a lot of sacks. However, he's tough. He's creative. He's accurate. I mean, there's some very, very redeemable traits. But the sense that I got was that there's no guarantee he's going to be a first-round pick. Remember Will Levis a couple years ago? Some people had him third, fourth, fifth overall in mock drafts. He fell to 33rd. It wouldn't totally stun me if that ends up happening with Shedeur, just because people aren't really in love with this class in general. And I would say Cam Ward has maybe a little bit more alluring set of traits.
We've got NFL writer for NFL Media and NFL.com, Eric Edholm, joining us here on the morning shift. Eric, I saw you posting times for the offensive lineman. You said you stayed till the end. So Georgia offensive lineman Jared Wilson, he was top five all-time in offensive lineman with the combine 40, and you noted that on his second try. What did he do for himself with 4.84?
And a quick aside, I'm a little disappointed you didn't mention Tate Ratledge in the Freebird video. They put his flowing locks. I just got to say that was a tingling moment from the weekend. Yeah,
you can hit them both.
This is the perfect example, in my opinion, of a player who was a one-year starter, obviously goes to a team that is known for offensive line talent, incredible depth in general, had to wait his turn behind Cedric Van Pran. Once he did, he played well, but had, you know, missed a couple games for injury. You know, so there's a small body of work for Jared Wilson compared to other prospects in this draft. And what do? You go out and turn out a borderline record time. I think Jason Kelsey has some of the records for centers, you know, guys in that 290 range or whatever workouts wise. But it was impressive. It was great. Anytime you can kind of top the list and stand out above the rest, you got a chance. And there aren't a whole lot of pure centers in this draft. That's the position every year teams struggle to find. I remember one year a team telling me they had like three draftable centers on their entire board, you know, which is, you know, that all of a sudden it's like quarterbacks. The need is so high and the supply is so low, you know, those guys can't help but be pushed up the draft. So he's definitely a player I want to see a little bit more on. I obviously watch Georgia's offensive line plenty, but, you know, focused on some other guys sometimes. But I'm excited. I mean, I think there's a chance he could maybe be in day two here, but I've got to ask around a little bit more about how the league feels about him.
Eric, I've watched Mike, you know, me and Mike actually played in the league. So I watched film with him, and we watched some Mike Green stuff. He looks phenomenal on film from what you've seen. But again, we're here talking about something that has nothing to do with football, and there's some stuff about why he left Virginia, and then it popped up. There's something in high school. What's the scuttlebutt around him if that's going to affect his draft stock?
Yeah, teams have known about the alleged incidents or the questions about what exactly happened, whether you're talking about high school or Virginia prior to him leaving for Marshall. You know, teams have done a lot of homework on that. I have not had a team say he's off our board, we have the full picture. I have not gotten that kind of information. I think teams were keeping it a little bit close to the chest prior to the Senior Bowl or at the Senior Bowl, which is when I asked a couple of different people about him. You know, we're talking about the nation's sack leader and a guy who showed up at the Senior Bowl and clearly looked the part. I mean, this is somebody who belongs very much so and is in that first-round picture. But it's another player that, again, you have to be careful with these things and make sure you do your as much homework as you can to find out what the consensus is or what multiple teams feel about him. So there may be some teams who are a little bit leery, right? If they don't have a clear picture of exactly what happened, or if they don't like some of the answers they're getting either from Green or from other people, I wouldn't be shocked, especially given the edge talent in this class, that teams just say, you know what, better safe than sorry. We're gonna take him off our board for character reasons, or put him on our sub board, which means, you know, I mean, essentially they wouldn't draft him where he's valued at. You know, like the player is a first-round pick, but we're not going to take him in that range, essentially. So hard to know. You know, that's something that I think over the next several weeks teams are probably going to be digging even more on. They may have thought they had the full picture and not been aware of something, and that's how the scouting process works, a series of checks and balances that, you know, start at the area scout level, work up to the director, and then the GM obviously has to make the decision on, you know, or what are we going to do with this player?
Eric, we appreciate all that you do and the great work, and you taking the time to join us this morning after the combine, because I know you got to be tired after that.
Hey, you know what? I had a nice drive home yesterday. I had a few lozenges on the way home, and we're ready to go again. So I appreciate you having me.
Glad you're still with us. All right, thanks, Eric. Take care.
All right, see ya.
That was NFL writer for NFL Media and NFL.com, Eric Edholm, joining us here in the morning shift. You can follow him on X at Eric_Edholm. So,
yeah, he was clearly starstruck by the guy who was intercepted by Jimmy Chitwood in the famous game. It's weird that Hoosiers just comes up again after everything.
Yes, man.
Over the last week. Look, I think he has some good information. I think it's a good thing for Mike Green if people have known about this, so they've been able to kind of figure it out. I think the Jerry Wilson stuff's interesting, because the one thing he said is that, and I agree with him, centers are hard to find, and they're seemingly more important these days with the defensive schemes and how they're disguised and stuff. But it does, if it pushes them up draft boards, it also pushes them up free agency boards, which is why Drew Dahlman is
exactly
the 19th best or 19th highest overall free agent right now.
Well, that's going to do it for us here on The Morning Shift. We'll see you tomorrow. Up next is The Steakhouse on Sports Radio 99.9 The Game.